What's going on, everyone? It's me, Lone. Welcome to episode 2 of Lone Vault Radio, a video games podcast where I invite my friends, other content creators, and industry colleagues to talk all things games. In the second episode, we have a very special guest. He is a YouTuber into all things Xbox and more beyond now, Mr. Colt Eastwood. Colt, how you going, brother? Thank you for joining me on Lone Vault Radio.
It's good to be back together. You and I podcasted 2 years ago, and
we did.
I just like called you on a whim because I watch your content all the time, and I'm like,
Thank you, brother. I
got to bring him on to talk about Starfield, and we had such a great time. It was like post-launch, and yeah, it was so fun. So it's really good to be here.
No, thank you for joining me. Like, I kind of wanted to have another follow-up conversation, especially after our initial, you know, Starfield talk. What's really refreshing about you, man, and we'll get into everything. Like, we want to talk about Xbox. We want to talk about Avowed because it is the hot button game right now. But what I really like about you, like, you're just so chill with everything, man. And you're heavily invested in the Xbox ecosystem. But for someone so heavily involved and can still be as positive yet constructive when it comes to criticism and everything, like, yeah. I love listening to your opinions and seeing what you have to say about everything. So I'm really looking forward to this chat, man. Honestly, I am.
Yeah, same. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So I touch on this channel and I kind of want to start on, you know, Colt Eastwood, what you're doing on YouTube, because like I would say about a year ago, a lot of your content was almost all Xbox and Bethesda, and still to this day it is, but you started like deviating a little bit, doing the weekly gaming news. I'm seeing some PlayStation videos here and there. Talk to me about that. Talk to me about your channel, what you've been up to, and like the kind of content that you're producing.
Well, I mean, I sort of have to kind of shift with the way the industry moves and changes and what fans and other gamers, fans like me are looking for.
Yeah.
And it really started to change around the end of last year, because early on in 2024, Phil, you know, said it's not a signal of what's to come and we're not putting our games on PlayStation. And then they completely shifted and 180'd that. And I started to realize, where's Xbox going to be in the future? Is Xbox going to die? Is Xbox going to become one of the biggest gaming publishers? Is it going to become a big name brand that creates a ton of great games? And am I going to be able to talk to fans that aren't just on a console? Am I going to be able to talk to people who are on PC, on PlayStation, the new Nintendo Switch 2? And I got pretty excited about that. So I kind of had to make a change around the end of the year in 2024. I was like, what can I do to cover more broad range news and talk about stuff that I usually only cover on my podcast on a Monday night? And I did this gaming weekly news thing and I put one out today, and they're always scary because I've been doing content where I figure out what I'm going to cover on my phone. I'm like, okay, I take some notes and bullet points and I sit down and I'm like, I'm typing out an entire script. I sit in front of the mic and I record that script to an absolute perfection as far as I think I can. Yep. So you get this polished production thing. And then when I was doing Games Weekly News, I was changed the name as whatever I remember to call it. Gaming Weekly News or Games Weekly or whatever it is. Same thing. I have made up a whole logo and everything. I still don't know what it's called. I'm only on episode 15. So super good at branding. But those are different because I put a bullet point on my TV. I have a big TV right here where I play and work and everything. And I just look at the topics. I just turn on the camera and it's so frightening. Like there's this big white light right there. And I'm like, today in the gaming news, and I just go off the cuff. And last night I recorded 30 minutes of me talking, covering this stuff on camera. And I'm a bit choppy on this feed, maybe a little bit, but you know, I try to get this nice polished production. And I do 30 minutes of like rambling and trying to be like really coherent. And then I bring it down and cut it down to like a 14 minute video. And what you get is a good chunk of the news. And some people have been really cool and said, hey, we want to hear your opinion. Like, give us the news and follow it up with what your take is on it. And for many, many years, you know, this is a content creator. Many, many, many times as a content creator, you're like, do people really want to hear my opinion? Or they just want to hear like the meat potatoes? Like they want to hear what the news is. They want to hear the hard, cold facts. They want to hear what's coming. And people have been really, really great. So when I say, you know, I'm not really a big fan of Bleeding Edge, but here's this AI thing. And I don't think Xbox, they need to be really careful so they don't lay off people. And people have been pretty decent about that. So
how scary is it for you? No, dude. And this is the whole reason like I started this podcast is not just to talk about games, not just to talk about what, you know, people that I'm bringing on are playing and whatnot.
Yeah.
I want to hear about you. I want to hear about what you do in the industry and your outlook on things. I've got to ask you, because Maddie and I had this conversation in our last episode. I'm not sure if you listened to it, but it's quite scary when you've been known for a particular type of content for a while and you start deviating and branching out, because the YouTube algorithm is like...
He was the Bethesda guy.
I was the Fallout guy, and even starting covering Bethesda more generally was scary, because I was like, crap, are people going to want to watch my general Bethesda content? It's the worst. It's like, are we going to watch you do a Doom video, or even Starfield, even though it's BGS, right? Like, when you start deviating from what you've been known for a while, it's scary, especially when the YouTube algorithm's like, get back in your lane. Don't experiment. Don't do new things.
I got that.
Did you feel that? Yeah,
with the Gaming Weekly News, the first three were like the lowest rated. I mean, I don't want to get into the weeds about like content creation as far as that. But
yeah,
the YouTube Studio app will tell you what your analytics are and where they rate amongst your other content. Mm-hmm. And my Games Weekly News videos were at the very bottom of my last 10 videos every single week. And I'm like, should I even be doing this? And a couple people were like, yeah, you should, because you're going to kind of grow an audience. And then when people say, I look forward to these, I'm like, oh, thank goodness. Because we make content for many reasons. And one of them is we talk about gaming, or we make YouTube content because our favorite thing that we do on our YouTube channel or on social media, people at work don't care about. Like, when we go to work, you can't talk about video games or whatever your big hobby is, because people don't really care. And so we do the content because you reach hundreds of people that want to talk about that. It's really scary to branch out and talk about other things, because for a while my channel was mostly focused on hardware and software when it comes to console gaming. And this past year I did a review of Almost Human, a game that's only available on PC, that's probably coming to console soon, and it's a game that console gamers would absolutely love. And it was scary. Like, I spent, 8 hours making that video, and I put it out there, and it didn't do super well, but I'm just like, you bite your fingernails. Like, I hope people enjoy this. I hope it doesn't waste their time.
Yeah, dude, I get it. I get the trepidation. I get how scary it can be in that moment. So speaking about that, like, what are your plans moving forward? Are you going to keep doubling down on the weekly gaming news, doubling down on obviously your normal content with Xbox and whatnot? What's the plans moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, that is the plan. Weekly gaming news, gaming week. I'm gonna have to look that up and figure out what the name of that segment is. It's grown a little bit.
I'm gonna look it up now for you.
You can correct me on my own channel. I'd appreciate that. Thank you so much. Last week I was like, oh, I gotta make my weekly gaming news, and it's just been so busy. I previewed South of Midnight. I just reviewed Avowed, and my wife says, you gotta do it. There's people who always talk about in the comments how they like it, and I sat down and recorded it. I'm like, I'm so glad I recorded it. So I'm going to continue with that. And it gives me a guaranteed video every Friday, which means I'm getting out there and I'm working, because the worst thing you do as a YouTuber is not make content and then go, why don't I have any views? It's because you didn't do anything. And I'm excited about Xbox for so many. I mean, they're really doing really well right now. Like, they've got this consistency thing that they finally arrived on last year. That took 8 years, and I was with them the whole time going, come on, guys, get off the bench. And they're just going to be this big brand name. And people will say things like, Xbox is dying. It's like, absolutely, the console's dying. But for the most part, the big console market is, in a lot of ways, is struggling. Mm. And Xbox is moving beyond that. And what it brings is the reality of that PlayStation fans are going to say, well, I get to play your game. And I just sit back in the comments and go, hope you enjoy it. I'm going to enjoy it.
All right, we got this is exactly what I wanted to talk about with you, because like, you have such a refreshing take on things. And part of the reason I wanted to start this podcast is to have laid back, chill conversations, good vibes. So I'm really glad that you're here to talk about Xbox. Tell me your opinion on the state of Xbox, what they're doing, because it's really refreshing to hear what you have to say. Yes, the hardware the discussion is separate, and we can chat about that separately. But when it just comes to Xbox, what they're doing, the games that they're making, tell me your thoughts, bro. Let's go into that.
Well, I mean, for a long time, Xbox had no games. If you go back into the late 2010s, that was like the universal acclaim from everyone, that Xbox had no games. And back then they had four studios. Really, that's all they had. They had two Forza studios. One of them they didn't even own. They had a Fable studio that was flailing. And then they had a Gears studio with the Coalition. So no wonder they didn't have games. And their competitors had bought up so many studios over the years and built their own that, you know, Xbox was so far behind. So now we went from Xbox has no games to Xbox has so many games because they have owned so many studios. And then this pivot to go multi-platform, long before Phil ever said, we're going to put games on PlayStation. I was trying to tell people, like, you don't understand. The Activision Blizzard merger, like they were trying to block the CMA and the regulators were trying to block the merger, saying Xbox is going to have a monopoly. They're going to have this control over gaming. They have too much power and too much money. Right. And I almost like I wouldn't be the type to write in a letter to the regulators or the government. But as a gaming fan on social media, I was like, don't you guys understand that Xbox has always allowed their games almost everywhere? And the joke I used to say is Xbox games are available to everyone. Except for a PlayStation only fan. Like if you're a person who only plays on a PlayStation, you'll never play a game on a phone or a tablet or a handheld or a PC or anything else. Like you might not get every Xbox game, but everyone else does. And so for regulators to say that Xbox is not allowed to have exclusive deals with all these games, I thought was pretty asinine when they've been so multi-platform and so pro-consumer and how people can play games. Because Phil's like mantra is, I think if you buy a game, you should be able to play it wherever you want. You bought it, you own it. You should be able to load it up on any device. The industry doesn't agree with that. So I think the future is that Xbox is just going to grow bigger and better. But most importantly, it's just about the games. And I've kind of aligned with some of the things that Phil says. Like when Phil says it's important for the games to grow. And he sort of says as a coping mechanism, because I don't know if Phil really believes that they should go multi-platform. I think it's something that other leadership within Xbox and Microsoft have kind of told him that needs to happen. It's a necessity of their situation being in third place in console. But also, I do believe that right now, if you're a game franchise or a brand new IP, your chance of survival are near slim. And we're seeing so many big franchises still laying off people in their studios or franchises that we love. Like Alan Wake 2 was like Game of the Year contender. And it is like struggling to be a major sales success. And you scratch your head and you're like, what's going on with the industry? It's really tough right now. We're just learning that like games like Roblox and Fortnite are eating the lunch of everybody else who are making the games that we can't wait to play and get lost in those brand new worlds.
People working on Fortnite, I don't think people realize like how many devs are actually on that bloody game. It's in the thousands, and they're producing content weekly, daily, like crazy. It's very hard for others to compete like that. What you were touching on before was interesting, because I saw this comment from Phil Spencer recently saying that, look, we would obviously love people to come over to the Xbox, buy a hardware, and exclusives do help with that. Traditionally, like in the industry, that's how the industry has worked. But when you have people that are firmly, I've got my PlayStation, I don't want to buy anything else, or I've got my Nintendo, I'm not going to buy anything else. What Phil was saying is essentially, well, what do we do? Do we just like leave those gamers alone and never try and engage them ever again? If they've firmly made their decision, is that the right choice? Or do we try and offer them an olive branch? Do we try and actually engage them in some way? And one of the biggest ways to do it is by putting one of our games onto their platform that they're never going to veer away from. And it's smart, right? Because, you know, 100% of zero is obviously less than 70% of something. Do you know what I mean? So yes, the PlayStation is going to take a cut. Yes, the Nintendo is going to take a cut for the game sold on their platform.
Yeah.
But that's better than getting 100% of nothing when those people just are never going to be buying an Xbox, and they're never going to be buying Xbox games on Xbox hardware. I thought that was very smart to say by Phil, and I think you're right in the sense that, look,
it's honest. For sure.
It is honest, but it's the way, and he might be a bit trepidatious because it's the way the industry has been for so long. It's exclusives, sell hardware, everyone has their exclusives, some games go multi-plat. And when that's the way things have been for so long, it's hard for anyone to veer away from that. It's just like, this is what I know, this is what I'm comfortable with. Any big decision, any big play that's completely different to that, like their new multi-platform strategy, everyone's going to double take and be like, hold on, are you making the right choice? But what else do they do in the third spot in the console market? Do they just sit there and do nothing and let all those people not buy Xbox games? I get where they're coming from. I truly, truly do.
Yeah. It's like what I was saying, do I make that video that I'm not sure will do well? Or just not do any, you know, or not do anything this week.
Yes.
As a YouTuber, like I always bring up, I kind of parallel what the games business is doing with me because having a YouTube channel is like having this teeny tiny little mini business, like,
yes.
And there's decisions that you have to make. And I guess it would sort of equate to me saying, am I going to cover more PlayStation stuff? I mean, not very much, because, you know, there's a handful of PlayStation things that I'm really passionate about. For the most part, Xbox has been like a major part of my life, has changed a lot of things in the way my life has gone, and for the better, and a lot of great things like that. And I play on everything, except I don't play very much on a Nintendo anymore. But yeah, I mean, it's a very naked thing for Phil to say, like, to really admit, like, we're never going to get people to leave the PlayStation 5 and go buy an Xbox. But I also think you could. I mean, as a hot take, I'm like, if you said Doom the Dark Ages, Outer Worlds 2, Indiana Jones, Fable,
Elder Scrolls and 6,
Gears E-Day, Elder Scrolls 6, thank you, Elder Scrolls 6, the next Fallout, if you made a blanket statement, if you want to play those games, you've got to buy them from Xbox or play them on Game Pass and buy them on PC. Like, that's where we are. That's where we're going to grow. And then Xbox would have an uptick of console sales. But I think that the financial people showed a chart to Phil and Satya in the boardroom and said, we could do that, but here's the growth curve doing that. Yeah. But if we sell everywhere, then we make a lot of money. And I think even PlayStation sees that. They're going to go to PC sooner than later.
Well, they are. After launch, but they are doing it more and more.
Yeah, because they can't. They're not. PlayStation isn't hurting. But you can't just leave that money on the table when the market is so volatile right now. Spider-Man 2 took a long time to make their money back. The licensing for that franchise is super expensive. And unfortunately, they had a botched release on PC, which Nixxis has never missed up until then. I think Nixxis did it. So I don't know where they went wrong. It was just a fluke. But PlayStation will go PC day and date pretty soon, by the end of the generation, I think. And they're going to enjoy the fruits of that and just allow all of their studios and their franchise to flourish, because people playing more games is the future. I have kids. I have kids that are in high school and junior high, and I talk to them and their friends. They don't care about the next banger, huge exclusive or the big open world action adventure game. They want to play Dress to Impress. They want to play Roblox. They want to play Fortnite. They want to play these games with their friends. It's like this big social thing.
Yeah, like absolutely. I could talk to,
like, if I walked into a high school and said, hi, I'm a, you know, I do video game content. I'm going to give you a TED talk about gaming. And I start talking about Hogwarts Legacy 2, like, there'd be like eight people in the audience be like, yeah, yeah. Cause I don't know if that generation is as excited about, that's like a Gen X, Gen Y thing. Like, we love like the cinematic action adventure.
Yeah.
We like games like Avowed.
Trust me, we are going to talk about Avowed, because I've spoken to a few people. Like, Maddie was a little bit on the negative side, and understand like everything that they're saying is completely valid. Same with Nausea as well. But I really want to speak to you about Avowed, because I freaking enjoyed the game. But I do want to touch really quickly on other Xbox games that you said that you played. South of Midnight. Yeah. How was that? I didn't get the chance to preview that. I'd be interested to know what you thought about that game.
It's I don't know if you played Ravenlock a couple of years ago.
No.
It's by Coco Cucumber. It's totally a AA third person, you know, kind of linear action adventure game. The combat is nothing to write home about, but it still works. The traversal's pretty cool. It's got wall running and floating and stuff that you like to do and that we like to do in games. I think where South of Midnight really shines is its tone and storytelling. You know, the creative director, you know, grew up in the South and wanted to tell the story of a young black woman in the South, and like the whole thing with the folklore, Southern folklore, and something that I'll learn about when I play the game. I think that's going to be really great. The vibe and the music's cool, but the game itself might just be, it might be okay. And that's kind of where I'm at with it. Like, it should be good. And if it entertains me all the way through, you know, it'll get a 7 or 8, something like that. Yep. That's what I expect from it. But I'm really impressed that Compulsion Games made something like this, because We Happy Few had some really cool ideas, but I got to a point where I'm like, I just don't know what's going on anymore. And I'm kind of lost. Right. And it was just kind of really a vague strange game. So I hope the best for them. That's kind of my predictions on where it'll go, and I'll be reviewing it probably.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm getting flashbacks to Hellblade 2 as well, in terms of like, you know, can I ask before I get into it, what did you think of Hellblade 2?
I liked your review. I liked it. Yeah, I think I gave it an 8 something. I don't even remember. Yep. It was like 6-7 hours, and I pretty much mostly took my time with it. It was a vibe like you usually don't get. Like, it was very, very immersive, and the combat was really great. Like, people tried to devalue the combat, but you felt like somebody had a steady cam and they were circling you while you were fighting. Like, even though it's third person, like, I was like wincing while I played it. They did such a great job, and the combat was pretty inventive, creative, I thought. It just looks amazing. Yeah. But then time passes, and I think about it, I'm like, I would never play Hellblade 2 again. And it's going to come to PlayStation probably this spring or summer. And I hope that people kind of can get a real appreciation, because really one of the problems we have in the gaming community is people will look at a game on their phone on like a Twitter feed or whatever. And they're like,
it's
mid,
not the same.
Yeah. Mid. And I'm like, I mean, you'll never hear me say mid when I look at something. I might say to my friends, like, I don't know if that's for me. I just don't get the fascination with people that will try and convince you that the game you like to stop enjoying it. And that will fold into your other topics as well.
can I tell you, man? And I've tweeted about this numerous times, especially over the past few weeks and months. Like, I've gotten to the age, and I've gotten to the stage where I don't have energy for that anymore. Like, I just want to, like, if a game's not for me or I don't like it, cool. I'm not going to yell out into the ether and be like, "F that studio." You know what
I
mean?
I've never heard you get on a soapbox over a game that you didn't like ever. You'll never see me do it either.
Like, it's so negative and it's so toxic in me, and it takes all my energy out. And for what reason? Like, what end am I trying to achieve there? Am I actually trying to constructively help that studio and that dev improve for the next game or whatever they're doing next? No, because if I'm just yelling and being negative, that doesn't do that. If I'm on a review and I'm being constructive and say, here's what I like, here's what I didn't like, that's what actually helps. But just
at least you played
yelling
it.
On Yeah, but yelling online and being, oh, that's mid or that sucks or whatever it is, like, it's not helping anyone. All it's doing is fueling negativity on the internet. I'm not saying I'm too old for that. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say that people shouldn't do that, because people can act however they're going to act. But
when I
make a post about a game I'm enjoying and I have to mute people who are just, they just want people to say, they want people to know that they don't like it. And you're going to hear my opinion. I'm going to use your platform to talk about something I didn't play and that I don't think you should be enjoying. And I think that's super weird energy. And it could come off as like an old man, you know, shaking his fist in the front yard. And I don't even think it's an old thing. Like, my kids don't do that.
Yeah.
Not because I didn't raise them that way. It's just like, most people don't act like that. Those people aren't real. The people that jump in and go, that game looks mid, I'm not going to lie, that game looks mid trash, that's not a real person. Real people don't act like that. I'm not sitting at Red Robin eating a burger and someone goes up, that's mid, and pushes my plate off the table. That's not a real thing. And it just gets annoying that I'm just like, mute, 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 mute. And then they just pop up, they spawn. There's like spores. And they just spawn into our worlds.
It's funny what you said. Like, you know, real people will oftentimes see something or play something, and if they don't like it, they'll be like, not for me, and they'll move on. That's as far as it goes. That's, you know what I mean? But the internet is this like microcosm of debate and discussion, and yes, oftentimes negativity. That, yeah, it's just, these aren't conversations that are being made in real life. And again, it's part of the reason why I started this podcast. I just want to chat about games in a fun way with people that also enjoy chatting about games, my friends and other creators. So on that note, Avowed. All right, I've been itching to talk to you about Avowed. I'm not going to preface this with anything. I just want to know straight up, what did you think of Avowed? Tell me. Go into it.
I was always excited for Avowed because it looked like my type of thing. It's not doesn't swing over to the Dark Souls thing. It doesn't swing over to the Pokemon. Like, it's like right in the middle of fun and serious, and I was expecting good things from it. But when I played the preview back in November or whatever it was, I don't remember when that was, I was like, oh my gosh, this is really enjoyable, really, really good. And they said, well, you have an hour and a half with the preview build. And I played it for 15 hours. And then I found out other content creators did as well. They just like scoured the world. It was funny because, did you play the preview?
I didn't. I didn't get the opportunity. No, no.
Okay, so they give you the first location and you talk to a couple of NPCs, and then the first quest is to go in to the main city. As soon as you do that, you get hit with an arrow and it says, thank you for playing. And I'm like, so I played the game for like 45 minutes and I'm like, what? What? And then I started over. I'm like, I'm not going in there. And that's
don't go there.
Yeah. Yeah, don't go there. And then I had unlimited playtime basically. So the game's great. Avowed is funny, super witty. It's not edgy. It's not preachy. It's not cringy. It's really well written. And the combat is unbelievably great. Like, just very accessible, accessible to the point where you can just build these combos and just play the game and just feel like you can just attack all the enemies and just be creative with the mix up of powers. Everything's so great about that. The exploration is top tier. Everywhere you go or look, if you want to go up or over or around and check that location out, there'll be something for you.
Yes!
The crafting upgrade leveling systems. Amazing. Like it respects your time. I was on Rand's podcast earlier and he says Cognito said this as well. It respects your time. Like, you want to go do something. Yeah, there's something there for you. We're not going to waste your time. You actually clear out the world. Every enemy you kill is gone. So you clearing out the Dream Scourge. The leveling system where you pick up these resources, these precious limited resources to upgrade your weapon. And then you go into the next level and the next tier is now the next precious resource. And you just feel like you're just building up your armor and your gear. I just loved it. There's some things it could have done better. Like, it didn't have any cutscenes. The production value is pretty low when it comes to storytelling, like a god's whispering in your ear and in your dreams for most of that in the cutscenes. And I would be like, I mean, I don't really care. And then
I felt similar. Yeah.
And toward the end, the story started to make more sense. And it took me halfway through the game to actually be invested in what was going on. So that was a knock. The game was just so dang enjoyable. I gave it an 8.5 out of 10 because I just had a big smile on my face for 70 hours thinking it was going to be a 15-hour game. I heard Greg Miller from Kind of Funny Games when he reviewed it. He finished it in 15 hours. I go, how? I was only, like, I didn't even go to Paradise, the main city, by then.
15 hours? No way.
He probably went to the quest and goes in there, gets shot, goes over and talks to the person, finds out who shot him, went over and killed the main boss, and then bounced at the credits. But not me. Enjoyed it.
How do you play that game for 15 hours? How do you get to the, like, I was in the first area for that time.
Yeah, I know. I was too.
I do want to touch on a few things because I think you and I are on the exact same wavelength with this game. I agree what you said about the story and the voice, but it's the exploration and the looting. I can't tell you, Colt, like, how many times I was giggling like a schoolgirl when I got into an area and I found a cool, unique weapon. It is the most satisfying thing when I'm like in a dungeon and I open a chest and I don't just find a freaking like a plant or some coins, when it's actually this cool, unique weapon that's not just like the base weapons that has special effects. That's rewarding. And I'm like, I want to go, dude, that's why every area I'm like, no, I've got to make sure I go here. I've got to clear out here. I've got to do this quest and that quest, because there was one quest, I think it was the Ranger quest, where you got this freaking awesome arquebus by the end of it. I'm like, now I can really start using that because I got a really cool, unique weapon. It pushes you, it respects your time, but it pushes you to actually explore and loot. Because there's so many things to find. I did talk to someone that was like, maybe they overdid it with the unique weapons in a little bit, but I'm like, nah, that was the best, one of the best things about the game. And then the combat, it was funny, you and I were talking about people online not having played a game. I saw someone reacting to a video that was showing the combat in Avowed, saying, oh, it feels like kind of VR. It doesn't feel like the combat has any weight to it. And I'm like, dude, play the game. Thank you for laughing.
Because that's my favorite one. Look, it has no weight to it. I'm like, I actually replied to a guy. I said, oh, you mean it doesn't have the hit drag you're seeing? It doesn't have the heavy weapons? It doesn't have the impact, the camera shake, the enemy stumbling? It doesn't have the blood splatter while they hit? Like, there's even blood in the game? Like, somebody watching from their iPhone on a compressed Twitter video is like, meh, mid. Yeah.
Like, how do you get a sense of the controls of a game when you're just looking at gameplay? Like, the determinative factors when you're holding a controller, whatever it might be, you feel every hit, the feedback, the intentionality of, like, all the movements. And it's not even just combat.
And the sound's
opening
great,
a door. The sound's great, too. But
oh,
like,
yeah, the way, boom, slam. They slam open a door, like, every time.
Chests open. It's great. It's great.
Yeah, they were paying attention. Those things do matter. Those production values of pulling levers and a lot of games, even Bethesda games, like, you know, you go up and you don't open any doors with your hands or anything. And I, you know, like Dying Light 1 did it really well. You would go up to a locker and your character's hand would go up and like do a quick swipe and it would kind of fake like you're grabbing it. But it just feels real all the time. The combat's fantastic. And anybody who says it's mid, I mean, I can understand. If you're a gaming fan, if you play a lot of games, and I've done this for forever, I can watch a gameplay trailer and I can feel, I know what that feels like. I was watching Crimson Desert the other earlier today, Crimson Desert footage, and I've watched it and I'm like, I know exactly how it's going to feel in my hands, because you just know, because you have tons of experience of watching and playing games. And when someone says they look at Avowed and they're like, that combat looks mid, that looks trash. They just don't like that combat. They're not going to like that. It's way better than Skyrim. It's actually, this is going to be a clippable quote, but
here we go. Come on, mate. Tell
Avowed's first person combat is, people are going to hate this because of Kingdom Come Deliverance, which is amazing. But Avowed's first person combat is some of the best feeling combat I've felt in a long time. The way that you attack, When you do power moves, it actually changes. My camera's not real smooth today, but when you swipe over this way and you want to do a power attack, it actually does your power attack this way from the backhand. It doesn't like fake and redo the animation. Like, they kind of kept that. The combat is really in line. I don't know if everybody likes this who's watching this. It's really in line with Dead Island 2 and Dying Light 2. Like, those melee combats are, Dead Island 2's amazing combat. I don't know if everybody loves that game, but that game was severely, that game was great. But anyway, Avowed's combat's amazing. And the magic, when the first time I was playing in third person for a while, and then I switched to first, as soon as I saw when you put that sigil, like that sign up, and it covers the whole screen, and then you push it out and yell some chant, I'm like, oh my gosh, that is so cool. I love it. But those are things that made an 8.5. Like, the game is just pure joy. Yeah. And it is really balanced really well, the amount of reward and the frequency of reward for what you're doing. It definitely doesn't waste your time. And when that guy said that they give you too much legendary gear, well, there's like 20 different weapon types, or at least like a dozen different that you may not. I never used heavy axes or heavy swords or arquebuses or even the bows, and sometimes those were the, you know, unique items I found, and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna salvage this thing because now I can upgrade my fire sword. Oh, it's great.
It's a really good point that you make. There are so many weapon types. Like, this is not just, and they've said this multiple times, like, this is not just Skyrim. It's Pillars of Eternity, completely different universe. You've got the heavy axes, the great swords, the normal maces, the bows and arrows, the grimoires, the wands, the arquebuses, two different types, like the pistols and the bigger ones.
The wand was
like,
great too, wasn't it?
Yeah, like, and there's so much. So if you're going to have a system where there's unique weaponry and unique armor, there's going to be a lot of it. If you have a lot of different weapon types, even if you had one of each, there's going to be a lot, but you can't just have one unique weapon in every area. So that's probably why it felt like there were a lot of unique weapons. But to me, that's not a fault for the game. That's actually a very good thing, because it encourages, as we said, looting. It encourages you completing side quests. Again, there's nothing more satisfying than being able to do that. The thing that I liked about the game, And I've said this in every RPG, in every game where you can, you know, set skills and attributes or whatever, it makes respecking So easy. So easy. And it's not just respeccing from the sense that I'm using a heavy weapons build or a greatsword or whatever, and I want to become a mage. You can do that. But also as well, let's say you make a mistake going down the path of, oh, you know what? This ability, like the dash or the charge ability I found later in the game wasn't so good. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to respec and not put so many points into that, and I want to invest elsewhere. It allows multiple play styles, especially with changing, you know, builds and whatnot with one button, but also it allows you to correct mistakes. It's way more forgiving. And don't get me wrong, love Elden Ring. It's a completely different approach, but sometimes it's hard finding the level tiers and to respec, and you're like, I can't do this too many times because I only have like 7 times to do it in a playthrough. Whereas with Avowed, it's like, no, just chuck us some coin and you're fine. They're different games and I love them both, but I do like how in Avowed it allows you to experiment.
Yeah, and it plays to that strength too, that people don't understand. A lot of comparisons were made to Skyrim, even though Kerry Patel and Obsidian and Fergus all said it's not Skyrim, it's not the next Skyrim.
Never.
I mean, they specifically said it wasn't the next Skyrim, and it really plays. I know it doesn't do a lot of, like, you can't sneak and you pickpocket, you can't just kill guards or have a bounty system. It doesn't have all those things, but it does so many things that Skyrim doesn't do. Like, Skyrim's amazing, but when I'm getting into combat and I want to like switch it up between a melee and a power and a heal and all this stuff, I am hitting B and bringing out a flyout menu, pausing the game over and over and over in one combat scenario. In Avowed, you're doing all this stuff on the fly. You can bring up a wheel briefly, but you can map stuff to the D-pad. And like, I've got the grimoire and the wand in one hand, and then I've got the fire sword and the shield in the other hand. I'm switching between those with a left and right D-pad. So I have 6 or 8 things that I can always do without ever stopping a millisecond of the combat. And just the whole world, the way the game feels, the exploration is just really contained and really punchy and chewy and ooey and gooey. That it's a satisfying loop that plays to that strength really well. I think it's why it's an 82 on Open Critic. That's why people are praising the game. And then you've got people like, Steam, anyone.
Very positive. Yeah.
Very positive. Yeah. And people are like, I don't understand why you're liking that trash. And then it had the social political nonsense that I would hope that it would overcome, because, you know, there is a fine line that as gaming fans, we should prioritize if a game is great or if the game just serves itself as a great game and a great story and great characters over some of the other stuff that happens on the periphery. And I think Avowed mostly stayed on the good side of that, barring a couple things. But Obsidian had a really tough walk up to this game, and I hope right now they're enjoying their celebration, because Kerry Patel said that the game, they're happy with the sales success of it. So
I saw that.
That's a really good thing to see, because they're just such a great studio and what a great talent. I'd love to meet them.
Perfect segue, by the way, man, because I do want to get your thoughts on Obsidian, because, you know, we have The Outer Worlds 2 coming later this year, which, side note, how the hell are they doing that? How the hell are they producing 2 games like this in the same calendar year? Like, it's kind of crazy.
They've almost doubled their studio, we just learned today. Yeah.
It's almost crazy. Like, I'm looking forward to that, even though I wasn't, and quite transparently, I wasn't as high on Outer Worlds as I was Avowed, but I'm still looking forward to trying and seeing what they do. We've had Avowed. What's your take on the games that they're producing as a studio, their outlook, and like kind of where you think they can go in the future, especially within Xbox?
I mean, it's not a vacuum, so I'll make the comparison. A lot of my friends have said that Obsidian is Xbox's Insomniac as far as quality and consistency.
I get that.
They're amazing. And though both of those studios are so creative, and everybody just loves just about everything they do. Grounded is probably one of my all-time favorite games in a long time. That game surprised the heck out of me. 600 hours with my son and my daughter. Like, we got 600? Lost in that world. We got lost in that world all through 2022.
Oh, my God.
We would play. I would be in here with my headset. My daughter would be in one of the rooms, and my son would be in the family room. Yeah. And we would just party up, and we would yell and scream at wolf spiders. And we would just talk about our adventures all the time. It was they're amazing. They're making a Grounded 2 is the report. Outer Worlds 2, I'm with you. Like, I think Avowed's higher on the list for me than Outer Worlds, even though I loved it.
I agree.
And when
they
say it's going to be 2 times better, I'm expecting like another 85 plus score. Outer Worlds is going to be more punchy, and I can't wait to see what they do with it. I hope Havarti comes back.
The big question I have for you, because the big question I had for you is like, so when I got into Obsidian, it was with Fallout New Vegas, right? Fallout New Vegas was the game. And you know me, I've always been the Fallout guy. And look at like big sign behind you. They're like bigger games. They're a different type of game to what Outer Worlds is, to what Avowed is. What intrigues me about Obsidian now is the approach that they are taking with games. They're not taking those, like, we're going to have this huge, big open world RPG and do so much. And it's probably because it's so expensive to make those kinds of games nowadays, like prohibitively at times, which is why it takes Bethesda Game Studios 5-6 years to make a game like Starfield, probably 5-6 years to make a game like Elder Scrolls. So it's very interesting. Yeah, no! But here's the thing. That's the truth. And if Obsidian, rightly or wrongly, were still making games like that, we wouldn't be here every 2-3 years talking about the next game that they're making. We wouldn't be here talking about them doing Avowed in the Outer Worlds 2 in the same year. So don't get me wrong. I would love them to go back to what they used to make with games like Fallout New Vegas, especially if they were given the reins to the Fallout franchise again, which I would absolutely love. But then another side of me is like, well, I want to hear more from them. I don't want to wait like with Bethesda Game Studios every 5-6 years because I love them as a studio and I want to see them make more games. Does that make sense? I'm so torn internally on it. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've been talking about this a lot lately. I just did a video yesterday about Elder Scrolls 6 and some of the rumors that are being teased about it. And when you're talking,
I would ask you about that, but continue.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good stuff. And I don't know. When you were talking, you made me think about how Obsidian is providing us this like nice little packaged meal of a really great game while we wait for Fallout 5 in 2035, you know?
I'm going to be in my 40s, bro.
I'll be like 90. Yeah, so. Oh my gosh, you're so young. It's ridiculous. Trying to remember.
No, don't say that.
I think I was like 36 when Fallout 3 came out. So yeah, I couldn't even begin to imagine how old I'll feel when I play Fallout 5. Obsidian's making great, great content. And I just discussed this recently that Fergus Urquhart and bring in Tim Kaine and Josh Sawyer and pin Todd Howard down and say, look, you know, we want to do this and you know that we can create something great while you guys do the masterpiece for Elder Scrolls, right? Just let us do this. Like you guys, imagine this, imagine 70%+ of the studio is working on Elder Scrolls and my small team is helping oversee a next Fallout game from Obsidian. Or imagine that Xbox and Microsoft and Obsidian just ask for a big investment. Like, we want to make the next Fallout game. We've got the blessing from Todd. They're going to help co-produce and publish. They're going to be on board overseeing the whole project. We're going to need to bring in another 100 or 200 people or bring in 2 support studios to co-locate or work with us on the next Fallout game. And Fallout's such a major franchise, especially when you have next year, you have season 2 of one of the coolest video game TV shows ever. Yeah. How could you sit on that? Like, make the investment. Like, we're going to bring in these studios. We're going to bolster up. We're going to bulk up and we're going to work on a Fallout spinoff in the Starfield 2.0 engine. Imagine Starfield, how great that game looks. Imagine that. Now it's been distressed. It's been littered with garbage and irradiation. And you make your next Fallout game based off the foundation of the graphics of Starfield. It could be unbelievable. For the people who hate Starfield, sorry. You're going to love it anyway, because I think it'd be amazing. And Obsidian could just knock it out of the park with all that support. That's my dream that I've been drumming up lately.
Do you know what I've been talking about? Actually, I don't think I've said this publicly too much, but my idea is that they should create a Strikeforce Fallout team, right? You get devs from a BGS, you get devs from Obsidian. Who's the other one under Xbox? In Exile? You get devs.
Oh my gosh.
All of those studios create this Strikeforce Ultimate A team, and they're the ones that make the next Fallout spinoff. How cool would that be? Like, come on.
I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot like what I was saying. Even if you say it's like a separate studio, you know, even if it was, I mean, in this day and age, you could call it Fallout Studio and that could be it.
Oh, that's such a good idea.
Because it stands to reason that season two of Fallout, especially since it's in New Vegas, is going to be a great, great success. I mean, I'm pretty sure. I mean, they've got such a great formula. I can't see them messing it up.
Yeah.
Fallout 76 is doing unbelievable. A game that everybody thought was such trash. It pulled me in 2023 like no other. I was completely baptized by that game. I used to hate it. I don't know if you knew that. I think we might have talked about that way back.
I did it. Tell me.
So I bought the game in 2019 when it first went on sale. I tried to play it like every year. I would reinstall it and everyone's like, oh, it's so much better. And I'm like, this game sucks. And I know everything about Fallout 4 from ins and outs. And I'm like, I'm lost. I don't understand the gear. I don't like this. It's not fun. And then when Starfield was about to come out, I think it was around spring or summer of before Starfield came out, I started playing Fallout 76 and I started over because I'm like, maybe I just kind of, I don't understand the mechanics and I understood the gear system and everything. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I played like 80, 100 hours of it. Got to level like 80 before Starfield came. Almost so much that I almost got Bethesda'd out before Starfield finally launched. Fallout 76 is incredible. And it saw a huge surge of people playing it that finally were like, holy crap, this is a really good game when the TV show was hitting. So we totally need a Fallout studio. That's just like, this is what we're doing. Because Fallout, it is so criminal that franchise is being left to just wait. And it can't breathe right now. And Todd Howard knows it, but he's also thinking,
he does.
What am I supposed to do? We're on Elder Scrolls. We can't do anything about it. It just has to wait. And I know he knows that if it was somebody that he loved and he trusted with his baby, that he could let that go. And next time I see Todd, I'm going to put him in a chokehold. Say, come on, buddy. Come on, you know. And I'm sure if you asked Todd, he'd be like, yes, I know. I need to relinquish it. And I think he's kind of coming around. Ryan McCaffrey gave him a good ribbing about it in his last interview. But it's what the fans want.
Todd knows, man. Like,
fans should win, right?
Yeah, if you read between the lines, even the interview that he did with Maddie, he knows how much it sucks for Fallout fans to wait, especially with...
Yeah, it was the Maddie cool interview, you're right.
It was, cool the TV show was and you know, how high everyone is on Fallout, whether it's Fallout 76 and just especially seeing the Starfield engine and how it could look in the future. But the problem is that Elder Scrolls fans have been waiting even longer. That's the part of the equation which I always forget to mention. Like, oh, we deserve this. We need this as Fallout fans. But how long has it been since Skyrim, right? Like, Elder Scrolls fans
I can tell you. Because my son,
tell me, please.
My son was just born when he was just a couple months old when Skyrim came out, and you know, now he's almost 14. So,
14 years. It's a long time.
Just a little baby with a big red birthmark on the top of his head that faded after about a year. But that thing's been long gone, and Skyrim's on my refrigerator.
That's why everyone is yelling out for Elder Scrolls 6. And obviously you have Elder Scrolls Online, which is a different type of game. Like I would say like Elder Scrolls Online, I don't, but from what I understand of it and just like, you know, seeing gameplay and whatnot, it's more MMO and away from Elder Scrolls, like a typical Skyrim or Elder Scrolls game, than Fallout 6 is away from Fallout 4. Like I will say, Fallout 76. Fallout 76 bridges that gap a little bit easier. So if someone loves Fallout 4, I think they can get into Fallout 76 easier than someone who loves Skyrim trying to get into Elder Scrolls Online. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I think it's a bit of a harder gap.
Yeah, last year I dove into Elder Scrolls Online and I went to the 10th anniversary celebration in Amsterdam. Yeah. And I had been kind of getting into the game before that invite. And it feels like when you play it, it doesn't look as good as Skyrim did. I remember when it first came out. You can play it single player, like you could play Fallout 76, but it doesn't really reward you for playing by yourself. And then I went to this convention and everyone's talking about all the MMO, like they're talking about they were speaking a language I do not understand. They were talking about the, I don't know what they call the raids or whatever they do it. Like, I don't even know anything about it. And I would never like, I don't have friends that I would meet up and do this stuff. So my content is like talk to a quest giver, go do quests, fight and go through dungeons and come out by myself and say, okay, cool, what I get. That's been pretty enjoyable, but you're right. Like it is so, it's probably more like World of Warcraft than anything else. And I don't even really understand that. So
yeah,
we're dying for the next Elder Scrolls, like single player game.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely dying.
Dude, I've been loving this chat so far. We've got like 10 or so minutes, and I kind of highlighted to you before we started recording. I want to get your thoughts just generally on games coming out this year. What you're excited for? We've talked a lot about Obsidian, we've talked a lot about Xbox, but what about some other publishers? Like I can see you're mm-hmm. keeping an eye on Ubisoft with Assassin's Creed. Tell me about it. What are you most looking forward to this year?
Yeah, thank you for making that correlation there and that specific change there, because I am really looking forward to Split Fiction and Assassin's Creed Shadows. Assassin's Creed Shadows is such a tough one because people are just, they are just not nice about the game. I really like the modern Assassin's Creeds as much as I like the classic ones. So I'm like most of those games I really like. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to Mafia, the Old Country.
Good shout. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one that's not being talked about. And apparently we were supposed to get like this spring or fall, we were supposed to get Judas, Ken Levine's next BioShock game, but they've been radio silent.
Where is it? God damn it. I'm looking forward to it.
Call him right now. Do you have his number?
I wish I could.
Hey,
it's so funny.
Where is it?
I don't know if you know this about me. I'm one of the biggest BioShock fans you'll ever meet, right? Like I love the franchise, and I find it funny in parts where Ken Levine's like, all right, I want to shut down the studio. I want to make my own thing. And then he pretty much just makes BioShock again.
He's like the lead singer that, you know, leaves his band and then he goes and, you know, like David Lee Roth leaves and he goes and finds a guy that plays like Eddie Van Halen, you know? Yeah. So he's like, I'm going to leave and go make another BioShock game. And I covered that in a video early in the year and there's a little bit of gameplay. It's like, it's BioShock. I can't wait.
I know, but here's the thing. I'm not saying that to a fault of the game. Like that makes me more excited because now we have Judas and then hopefully we actually get BioShock 4 and we're loving life.
I'm going to say another clippable like hot take. I think we need a little bit more copycat in the games industry. And the reason why I say that is because we wait a decade for the next Grand Theft Auto.
We do.
We wait decades for the next Fallout. I don't understand why some studios not like, let's take everything that people like about Fallout and just build a game like that, but a different setting and a couple different style changes. But you know, that core feeling that makes us play Fallout, we're gonna rip that off. Maybe they can't do that. Maybe they get sued. But when a studio's like when you play Warhammer Space Marine 2, it kind of rips off Gears and then does a little bit of its own thing. And I love it. But as consumers, like when you don't get it, when you get a Gears game every 8 years or every 10 years, and then somebody comes in and says, well, this one kind of like Gears. You're like, heck yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. I think as gaming fans, I think we're okay with a little bit of copycat. And so I'm like, hey, where's my next, you know, epic sprawling fantasy open world RPG like Elder Scrolls? Come on, Obsidian, make one.
Well, this is the thing, man. It is just so... With AAA gaming and how expensive it is and with the way that budgets are blown out, it's so prohibitively expensive to spend that amount of money on a game that size that's a new IP and untested. That is the big thing. Like even from the perspective of Bethesda Game Studios and Starfield, that was a risk because the thing with Starfield is that as a new IP, you haven't developed that special sauce yet. Yet, it's still as big of a game, if not bigger. It requires hundreds of millions of dollars to invest into it. It's a lot to ask a studio that has an untested IP to be like, now you make that game for the next 4 or 5 years, and it could be a success or it couldn't. Like, I liked Starfield. I like base game Starfield, don't get me wrong. But at times, I felt like it lacked the special sauce that a game like Fallout has with the 1940s, 50s Americana and the post-apocalyptia. It's hard to catch lightning in a bottle, right? So it
needed
still
a radio station.
It needed a radio station.
There's like little things that you and I totally agree. It needed little things that make. I'm fine with picking safes with the ring system. The digipick.
I like that system.
I like that. I do. But when I go to a computer, I should have a different hacking system. That I would have really liked that. Like, that's just a little change. Like, there should have been a different hacking system for equipment and then one for doors and locks. And I would have been cool with that. Like, these are little things that make stuff like chewy and ooey and gooey that make games feel satisfying. There's big
things
that are...
It's what makes Fallout feel Fallout, right? Like, it's at times, and again, and I have to keep preface this by saying, I actually like base game Starfield. Shattered Space, different story. But at times, it did feel a little sterile, right? It felt like it doesn't have the uniqueness and the wackiness that I'm expecting from a new IP. Kind of, at times, it just felt like space game. Whereas, whether it's Skyrim or Elder Scrolls or any other successful game, it has those unique things that make those games special that you can't really get from anywhere else. So going back to the kind of the original thing, it's so expensive when you're doing that with an untested IP where you haven't developed that special sauce yet. That's why we don't get many of those games, because it's hard.
It's risky. It's risky. Very. And it's difficult. Yeah. There are things that, I mean, you and I did a whole podcast, which was great, about Starfield and the future of Elder Scrolls and stuff like that. And I think it's so funny. And thanks to your fans and your audience for watching this. Like, I know that every one of them that are watching this sometimes have to quietly admit, sometimes we as fans have better ideas than the studios, and they should listen. Because I think gaming fans are amazing because they've played so many things that they have great ideas. I think that should be realized as well, because we just have so much experience of what we love. And it's nice to see studios kind of listening to that and putting their finger on the pulse, saying, what is it that people really like, and how can we provide that for them? And I hope we're getting there. Is it's just game development just takes so much longer, and the wait for games is excruciating now.
It is. It's hard. Like, when you're talking about ideas and features, like, scope creep becomes a real thing. It's very hard. 'Cause like, a lot of these devs as well, you have to, they are gamers as well. Like, they come from the exact same background as us. There's a reason why they're in those roles. So it's hard for them to write everything that everyone thinks is a cool idea on a paper and be like, what can we actually include feasibly? What actually works? Yeah. What melts together with this feature and the systems that we have in the game and the technology that we're using? That's why, like, it's easy for us to sit on the armchair and be like, oh, do this and do this and do that. But the reality is, practically, that's quite difficult. So I hope that when it comes time for Elder Scrolls 6, they are investing the time in the, like, I don't necessarily need to see a big settlement system. I don't necessarily need to see, like, you know, Starfield had the spaceship combat and the spaceship customization, which, like, was cool, but I probably would have preferred a bunch more faction quests. I probably would have preferred, do you know what I mean? I think I would have liked to have seen that time go into a different area. But the thing with BGS, they always like to have that big, shiny new feature with every one of their games. So with Fallout 4, it was settlement building. With Starfield, it had a lesser form of settlement building, but it was really the spaceship customization.
The settlement building was awful, in my opinion. Unfortunately.
When you go from 76 to how much, and I talked to Maddie about this last week, there's so much decoration, there's so much stuff. And part of me was like, just take it, copy and paste into Starfield, and I'll be happy. And it wasn't that.
You literally have thousands of items littering the world, and we can't use any of them. Like, you have all these different architectural styles, and none of them carried over into your hab. Your hab was so bland. Fallout 4 did it the best, better than 76 sometimes. Because you could just, like, build walls and everything. It was really, like, component-based. But, I don't know. There's a rumor that there's ship building and ship battles in Elder Scrolls, where you can actually build your own wooden pirate's vessel, and it takes place in Hammerfell or High Rock. And who knows if any of that's true? And now it sounds like you don't want to get out on the high seas and be like, "Arr, matey." But
I it's so funny that you're talking about this, because I was talking to Maddie in the last episode. I'm playing Assassin's Creed Black Flag right now, and don't get me wrong, love the
why they're remastering it like this year or something,
because I wanted to play it. It's like the one Assassin's Creed game I haven't played, and I wanted to get
it's
it
one
out
of my favorites. I gotta hear what now I'm on pins and needles.
I love it. Like, I'm an Assassin's Creed fan through and through. There's not too much that you can do in an Assassin's Creed game that's going to make me hate it, right? But there are times, right? I'll happily admit it.
Yeah, I know. I love it. I love it too.
But there are times playing Black Flag where I'm doing the whole, you know, pirate shipping, you know, plundering and attacking other ships and everything, that I'm just like, I just wish there was a big world that I was exploring, kind of like Valhalla, right? And obviously Valhalla, you could go to different areas too. But
yeah,
there's so much of that. Like, you're so always stuck on the seas and the in-between and Black Flag, that part of me is like, no, just give me the one open world that I can just explore and do things, right? I don't want to get onto a ship. I don't want to, because all of that stuff to me is kind of like periphery. It's not the core meat and potatoes of why I am playing that game. For me, Assassin's Creed was always the parkour on a building,
yeah,
killing people, doing, like, talking to people, doing the side quests and everything. It's not necessarily
major towns and much in that game. It's been, when did that come out?
Oh, long time.
2011?
Yeah, it was
2012,
about that.
2012.
And there, yeah, and there are some, obviously there are some cities and areas that you can go to, but not to the scale like we saw in Assassin's
in
Creed
Rome.
2. Yeah. In Rome. Like, that's what I want. That's what I want from Assassin's Creed. So, and I think that's also what I want from Elder Scrolls.
You've got your crew like singing pirate shanties to you while you're on the high seas.
I like it. Don't get me wrong, but yeah, on Shadows, I really hope that they knock it out of a park, because how long have we been asking for a Japanese style Assassin's
Creed
game?
It's like 07.
It's been ever
since franchise
the first
started.
One.
Yeah.
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 Okay, yeah. Before we wrap up, are you positive on Shadows? Like, are you hopeful that they're gonna kill it or not? What do you reckon?
I'm not positive that they're gonna kill it. I did the preview and yep, I didn't love the preview. Like, it just felt kind of empty to me. And I'm like, but I also felt like when I play an Assassin's Creed game, like, I go out in the world and I do my thing. And when the clock's ticking, they gave me like 4 hours to play, but
nice.
Sometimes when you're playing a game, you're just sitting back on the couch, you're just taking it in, and you're doing the thing at your own pace because you know you have a month to play it or whatever, or you're gonna spend all this time. I was like, I'm a little worried about how densely packed with stuff that game is, but Yasuke is amazing. He's like a tank. Naoe is like really fast. I really hope they nail it, because I do not want Ubisoft. I know people have problems with Ubisoft and they phoned some things in, but they're a very important studio to this games industry. They've created some of our favorite franchises for so long. Every single studio or franchise in our lifetime has had their ups and downs. Yep. And I think it's really important for Assassin's Creed and Far Cry and all these franchises that they have that people love. It's really important that they find their redemption, and for all those people that make those games to have a success and that they do it right. And I hope they are doing it right. Yeah. So I'm hopeful for Assassin's Creed Shadows. I hope they do a good job. Hope I like it.
Yeah. And ultimately, like, competition in games is a good thing. Like, I don't want to see a studio like that get swallowed up. I don't want to see it go away. They've created so many great games. Prince of Persia as well, something that's close to my heart. I really hope that it's like they come out of the gate, it's a strong game, and everyone starts, loving Ubisoft again. But we'll see. It's coming out soon. We've got a big year, bro. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I really enjoyed this. This was a great chat. Lots of laughs. Can you please tell everyone what you do, where they can find you? I'll include all your links in the description, but let them know.
Thank you. I'm Cole Eastwood, so I cover a lot of gaming news, a lot of console, PC, and Xbox stuff, a lot of studio stuff and tech. I really appreciate you having me on. It was like such an effortless discussion.
And hell yeah. I'm glad.
And you do such a good job interviewing. Like, I'm like, it's so effortless for you. And I remember when I asked you, hey, do you want to do this thing with me for Starfield? Like, I didn't really, we never talked before. And I think it's amazing that we can just get on a mic and a camera and get to know each other this way, because we're in a phenomenal community of people that love games. And,
Thank you, brother.
Like I say, we band together because the guy in the break room doesn't care about what game we played last night, but all of you do. And that means so much to us. You can find me at Colt Eastwood on YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. And I have a TikTok account that was
nice.
I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not dancing on it, but
go follow Colt Eastwood on TikTok. Do it right now. I will include
I have like 1,000 followers. It's like, once I get 10,000, I'll be monetized or something. So we'll see that in about 8 years. But yeah, thank you so much. This has been super fun.
Sincerely, bro, I've really enjoyed this episode. Again, please go check out Colt Eastwood on all his channels. I'll include the links in the description. And until the next episode, this has been Lone. Please take care of yourselves, and would you kindly keep fighting the good fight.